Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Taylor Quimby, in for Virginia Prescott. A voyage across the sea, a trek to the North Pole, a walk across the country. Great travel adventure stories usually end in one of two ways. Either the hero makes it or dies trying. We rarely hear about the ones that didn't quite make it or give up halfway. In 1992, NHPR's Sean Hurley tried to walk across the country and failed. And while he may not have achieved what he set out to, he did record his journey on a handheld cassette recorder.
Lying in bed right now, it's getting around 7:15. I can tell by the sound of my voice I'm a little dazed. It's just hard to believe that I have 150 more nights out, 150 more days of walking 20 miles or so.
It was February 20th, 1992, and it was the first day of my walk across the country. 20 snowy miles from Cambridge to Sudbury, Massachusetts. I'd set my tent up in the woods beside Longfellow's famous Wayside Inn and sat in my sleeping bag with a handheld tape recorder and read what I had just written in my journal.
There is no such interconnectedness in the universe. All things are alone and isolated. All atoms are spaced appropriately. The only connection is accident.
I was a fan of Democritus' idea on the nature of the universe, that the totality consisted only of atoms, motion, and the void. No sentimental meaning to be found, no story to be unraveled. The next morning, I rose and packed my atoms and began my motion, having no idea I was headed directly into the void.
I'm trying to drink as little as possible.
I didn't mean water. I was 24 years old, and I already knew what I was. I'd been drinking almost daily for 4 years. I was an alcoholic and couldn't find a way to not be. The simple hardship of walking across the country, I figured and hoped, might be my only cure. On my second day, I stepped into a bar.
Rained a little bit last night, and I got a little too drunk at Mondo's. I hope not to do that again.
I wanted to be a writer, but my constant drinking had dropped me into a constant depression.
I want to put myself back under the spell of living, and I have lost it.
I'm a lot like my grandfather, and a lot like his son too, I guess. So they say, my Uncle Dick. Both were effortlessly charming, which I've never been, and both full of life. And maybe I shared their looks. It's what my mother said, my grandmother, or my aunts. You're so like your grandfather, they'd say. So like your Uncle Dick.
I'd like to take some kind of an oath or allegiance for one big spiritual, personal, world truth that I would like to try, be faithful to.
Democritus's atoms, motion, and the void were not a belief system. They were facts, not a faith. And though I wanted to find something to believe in, it would have to be a truth beyond question. Something I just knew was true.
I'm beginning to think it's all that I came on this walk for. Finding the center is what I'm doing.
My grandfather stayed with us every summer, all summer. He'd sit on our porch, we'd play cards, he'd smoke and sing and talk. He had dozens of old card player expressions. He'd accuse me of laying back in the weeds, of dancing on my heels. From Natchez to Mobile, he'd sing in a smoky voice.
From Natchez to Mobile, from Memphis to St. Joe, wherever the fall.
He'd talk about the great tragedy of his life, the loss of his only son, a magically attractive genius boy who came home wrecked from Vietnam and died in what was called a canoe accident. Really, his canoe had tipped over in a calm and shallow river, and my Uncle Dick was too drunk to swim.
I can't believe it's only been 2 days. It seems like a month already. But I suppose I'll have to get used to that, or not getting used to that, I'll have to break into a thousand little pieces.
My grandfather wasn't shy about his past. I knew he was in and out of the gutter, here and there homeless, on and mostly off the wagon. He lived in a monastery for a while, in shelters and charity homes, and on the street. His wife left him, his daughters. Even my mother, who let him come stay with us, didn't want to see him.
Well, I drank too much, and hopefully I won't drink very much into the future. It's getting a little silly.
I didn't drink until college. I abstained, a teetotaler, like my mother. I went to plenty of parties in high school where drinking was the main attraction, but I'd sit by the stereo with a Coke and listen to the music and marvel at my restraint.
I went into the bar room. It was a very small, very dark, about six tables all with little candles on them.
I got a scholarship to a little Ivy League school, not because I was smart, but because I could run fast. I ran a 4:12 mile my freshman year, fast enough to get my coach talking about the Olympics, fast enough to start talking about sub-4-minute miles. Drinking ended that my sophomore year. I quit the track team, lost my scholarship, stopped running.
Last night I stayed in a broken-down shack filled with mason jars and chairs and old farming tools.
By the end of the first week of my walk, I was drinking during the day. And like some kind of landlubber pirate, for me, that meant singing.
I'm gonna mush your skull with my crawdad armpit. I'm gonna bust some bones on my way to hell. I'm thirsty from drinking too much. I'm just kind of dying and no good.
I've never listened to these 22-year-old micro cassettes until now.
When I'm feeling blue, all I have to do is cast a look at you, and I'm free.
I went away for a semester abroad in Ireland my junior year. I didn't attend a single class. I woke up in fields beside the ocean with cuts and bruises on my body from falling down. I wasn't effortlessly charming. I wasn't smart. I wasn't full of life. But in one way, at least, I was just like my grandfather.
I think you were somebody that was, in a way, maybe having a kind of breakdown.
At the time I left for the walk, I was living with my best friend Chris in a house in Watertown.
I remember when you left and you were a broken up person.
Chris worked at a liquor store, delivered newspapers at 4 in the morning, but every night he and I would go down to the basement and play music. We had a small amp, a mic, a couple guitars, a drum machine, a tape recorder, and whatever liquor we could get. Chris would play, and I would sing.
You were just making up lyrics on the spot that rhymed and sounded great and had little stories. And like, I listened to things we did, I'm like, oh, he sounds exactly like The Cure. Or, oh, he sounds exactly like Morrissey. And, oh, he's doing his Michael Stipe, and it's perfect.
But I had no voice of my own. Only borrowed voices.
We knew that you were not right. You drank an extreme amount of booze all the time, and I was quite the drinker also, but I couldn't keep up with you, and you would just keep going. You needed to straighten yourself out, and that was your way of doing it.
As a poet, musician, and all-around artist, Chris decided to film some parts of my walk with a Super 8 camera.
You know, in a way, maybe in the back of my mind, I thought, well, I'll do some Wim Wenders-type black-and-white thing of guy walking on these barren roads.
Chris and a friend came and went and shot the guy walking on the barren roads. And then, as he was nearly out of film, he suggested a sit-down interview in Pennsylvania.
You took a long time to answer our questions, and you were really not articulate. Like, you couldn't communicate to us. You seemed like you weren't doing too well.
Here's his first question. Had anything surprised me so far about the walk?
Surprised? Not really surprised. Not surprised. Just slightly. I'm sort of easing into that a bit.
Cut. We would ask you a question, and you would pause and think for what seemed to me an excruciatingly long period of time before you started saying anything. And when you did speak, I could not understand what you were talking about. I really couldn't.
I pushed on through Pennsylvania. My inability to communicate deepened.
I think I'll be somewhat speechless.
I stopped writing in my journal. I stopped recording on the handheld. I kept drinking. I kept walking. I crossed through Ohio. Deciding that I was done is the last clear memory I have. Things began to dissolve. There's a blank space that stretches out and never clearly ends. I know I kept walking, but I was no longer there.
It seemed to me like you were gone for years.
Eventually, I returned home. I don't know how or when.
But somehow when you got back, it fixed you whether you like it or not. Or maybe it was like electroshock and you weren't fully cured, but you were put back together by the time you got back.
I drank less, took long breaks from drinking. I started running again and writing. My walk across the country was not a triumph. My rock bottom lay below the rocks, below the bottom. Rather than walking across the country, I'd walked into the death of my first self. I'd hoped to find the center, but what I found instead was the void. I haven't had a drink in a long time now. I run every day or walk. I write stories and songs and plays. I still don't sing in my own voice. This isn't my real voice. I don't know if I have one. In 2006, I began a podcast called Adam's Motion in the Void. I improvise stories using a made-up voice because a false voice has always felt more comfortable, authentic. What began with my descent into the void ended up the finale of my first play, also called Adam's Motion and the Void.
In a rushing rainbow crystal, every image, every story, every observation from my life in a torrent of light. And I said farewell to each in the only way one can, with the kiss of forgiveness.
The story of a man who has lost his way, his sense of self, and who's forced to bear witness to his own death, and through that, learns a big spiritual world truth that he doesn't need to believe in. He simply knows it's true.
To know that one dies into the vortex of one's own birth, and that all beings, animals and matter, whether stone or tree, bear forth from the selfsame emptiness and return there when complete. To die in one's own arms, as ever one has been, invisible, strong, transparent, clear, cradled thereby in the crucible of the hands of God, which is nothing but love, which is nothing but the self, which is nothing but the universe, which then, in its fulfillment, may be said to be comprised of this selfsame trinity alone, of atoms, motion, and the void.
You, my mother came to me after the play, are so like, she whispered, as she embraced me, your grandfather. For Word of Mouth, I'm Sean Hurley.
If you'd like to see Super 8 video of Sean's journey, as well as some photos, you can find them on our website, wordofmouthradio.org. Next, from personal journey to the big business of personal improvement, we'll explore the history of the self-help book when Word of Mouth continues.